Thank you very much. My goodness, what a joy to be here. And your love and appreciation for learning and unlearning and support and awakening together is true. So I honor you, your mind that came through in organizing this group and this possibility for us to learn together and to teach as well. So, welcome everybody. It's a delight and a privilege for me to be here as usual. I am absolutely in the role of a teacher and I'm absolutely in the role of a student. And I have found in my time that students have a lot more fun than teachers. So, while I am learning together, I will bring forth anything in the world that's ever benefited me and know and accept the certainty and the reality that you too are going to be in some way and that. There's no more for it. Tonight is the night that we call forth and invoke a spiritual awakening for each and every one of us as we discover shamelessly, guiltlessly, some pattern, some something that we had not been aware of before, and that we are dealing here with our own exceptions of anything that would keep us from a deeper, full realization of our own divinity and the absolute certainty of that. So, welcome everybody. I certainly welcome your questions, comments. And I want to start tonight with the quits. We've been looking at quits, two quits each week. And I'm very excited about this one because you all know this is where the crux of all of it is, and it is to quit blaming. Quit blaming. Now, it sounds easy. Like, okay, I'll do that. Well, so it's not just a taking responsibility for our own life and taking responsibility and accepting that there's things about our quote own life that we don't get to pick. Not what happens to us, but relate to what happens. And the power to claim if we absolutely stop blaming anybody or anything, anything in the past, anything in the now, anybody in the past, any organization, any relationship, any look, any word, any attitude, any company, any corporation, anybody, including God, for what's going on, the shape we're in, or how we're experiencing. So, in quitting blaming, then we have the possibility to quit also giving away our God-given personal freedom and power. So, then in quitting this blaming, we have the means to stand in power, to take back power where we've handed it over, where we've abandoned ourselves, and where we have claimed a vulnerability that's not true or that is just not so. So, as we launch into this, begin to think about not do you blame? Yes, yes, yes. Do I blame? Yes. Who? Who do you blame? What are some examples of people that you blame? Who's in your target? Our spouses, certainly our spouses, partners, husbands, wives, commonplace that we displace this kind of anxiety. I typically, I'm blaming whoever's in 3 feet of me. Certainly, we blame our parents, our mother, who could not live up to our expectations, who could not live up to our fantasies of a mother. Our fathers, who were not the father of our dreams, who didn't meet our notions of how not only a father, but show up either. Yeah, we blame doctors, even blaming doctors for a diagnosis, like they're the cause of something, or they should have caught it sooner. They should have thought about this. Who else? Who else do you blame? Somebody's blaming the TV. We blame traffic. We blame bosses, coworkers, and somebody just nailed it. It's a big one. We blame ourselves. I want to segment it a little bit before we get into exploring the many ways that we blame ourselves, how it's also directed. Before we go into how we blame ourselves, let's keep it outer directed a little bit. So look at, it's very clear that we can make a long list here of who we're blaming. You might even start to write it down, folks. Start to write it down. It's like keeping a record for yourself. So without shame, without guilt, and without further self-blaming or self-hating, begin to keep just a little record, maybe, of every time the mind blames. It's its normal operating system. The second it gets affronted by anything, the second it doesn't get its way, it is so upset, it's so hurt and offended, affronted by not getting its way, that it automatically displaces that anxiety onto another person, place, or thing, even an animal. I remember in the scene, one of the songs in Cats, the Broadway tour, That Damn Cat. That. So if you've got pets, you'll get a giggle out of that probably, and how we blame the pets that are in our house. So look at now not only who you blame, but what you're blaming them for. What is it you blame them for? You know, I blame people who can't read my mind. You know, they should, you know, assess our personalities and give us feedback about our personalities. And one of my personality traits was I don't speak the obvious and I believe everything's obvious. So it's easy to say that I thought I spoke something when I actually didn't and that somebody's going to read my mind. I also blame people that I judge as being irresponsible or disorganized, or like they're at fault in some way about that. That's still a judgment that runs through me. What do you blame for? It's not just who do you blame, but what do you blame them for? There are two. Yep, we blame our gene pool. We blame our family for what we've inherited. We blame them for what they did do, what they didn't do. You blame them for their thinking. Yeah, a lady today in the workshop that I was doing, I'm down here in Miami, and she said she was she has road rage. She said she had road rage, and she was aware that the level of her road rage was measured by how much anxiety and stress she had. So somebody could cut her off on certain days. It didn't affect her at all. And the next day, she could just be, ready to really go to war with them. Oh, this is a good one. We blame folks who cannot notice how wise we are. That's, you know, I say that's our attempts to be a somebody. And when people don't notice what a somebody we are, we can really blame them. And I don't see if you can relate to it that we often amp it up. You know, we've got to like jack our wisdom up. So if they're not seeing just how wise I am, I got to get all that much more wise in hopes that they're going to notice. The absolute hell of seeking that noticing, seeking that love, that approval, a validation, appreciation, acknowledgement. The hell of it. And one of the comments here is that it's all God's fault. And it's like, where does that leave us if we say that even that it's not only God's fault, but that there's something at fault here? So some of you did the last mini series with me where we used the technology of Byron Katie's The Work, And that includes a judge your neighbor worksheet. And tell you my most powerful worksheets to date that I have written have been against God. And I encourage you, if you haven't done that, to find a way to express some of this hurt and upset and blaming, fault finding, irritation, disappointment, sadness, despair, whatever it is that's been created in the emotional field, to kind of have your reckoning with God in whatever way you have to. And that work, the work.com and those judge your neighbor worksheets was the way that's been the most effective for me. And I wrote reams of paper about God and what God should do and shouldn't have done. And I'm just smiling real big now that I realize that I wasn't consulted. You know, God didn't check in with me to see how this was going to go for me. So who we blame, what we blame, and what are the consequences of blaming? When we blame people for not pulling their weight, when we blame people for needing or wanting something from us, when we blame them for not being awake, we blame them for not being enlightened. What are the consequences to you and your life of blaming? What does it cost you? Yes, it costs us our peace of mind. It keeps me from self-realizing. So then I'm other-realized, dumping and displacing my anxiety anywhere I can find a dumping ground. And I'm not here looking at and relating to it from not do I do that, where do I do that, and how to take my power back. Yes, it isolates me from others. So it costs me essentially my own peace of mind. It also costs me relationships. It costs me trust. It cost me people being able to find a safe place with me. That I can't, no one in their right mind is going to feel safe or in the presence of someone that uses them as a dumping ground for blame. So who would you be? So imagine it didn't blame anymore. If it left you, so to speak. Like just starting tonight, we wake up in the morning and we have been freed from blaming. What would it be like not to blame? No more storytelling. No more dramatics. If I wasn't blaming, then I stump my toe and there's no blaming. Who would I be with the stump toe? Traffic is blocked and not flowing and I'm not blaming others or myself. Who would I be in that situation? We've got a lot of allure in the media right now. A lot of places to finger point and place blame. Who would you be observing what's happening in the field without blaming? More peaceful. Resourceful. Able to think. Yes. In the stumped toe scenario, I'd still have a stumped toe. I just wouldn't have the angst of blaming myself, shaming myself, telling myself I shouldn't have done this, I shouldn't have done that, I should have worn shoes, I should have seen it, or you shouldn't have left that out there, you should have seen it, you should have put it away. So if I keep throwing all that should out there, the BS of the should, then I've got all of that hell and the suffering of that hell and a stump toe. Yes, we'd be a little less like the devil. And if we were not as much like the devil, what would we be? More forgiving. This is coming from the participants. Healing quicker. Not probably healing quicker. Yes. Healing quicker. A very quick return to healing. What if you didn't blame those teenagers? What if you didn't expect those teenagers to be different than they are? You don't have to like how they are or what they're doing. We just don't have to blame them for how they are and what they're doing either. Just like we didn't want somebody blaming us for how we are and what we were doing. Other comments include, I'd be empowered. Be quicker to forgive myself, quicker to forgive others. More accepting rather than accusing. Yeah, no more accusing. Now, every master teacher, sage, wise one has told us to do this, has told us, I'd be present. Thank you, Connie. I'd be present, understanding. And understanding humanness, the full spectrum of humanness, and that there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing they can do that's new. Everything's as old as creation. Now, think about then, what's the consequences? And look at, you know, I hear the word ego here. Used here. So think about then from an egoic perspective, what's the payoff? What's the ego get? What's its drug for continuing to blame? What's it protecting? What persona is it keeping in place when we continue to blame? So what's the egoic mind or the fear mind's payoff? Victimhood, it keeps to stay a victim, a small self that runs the show. There's no shortage of things to be affronted by. How would you describe it? What gives it juice? This blaming, this placing blame on self or others. Just notice how that keeps us bound. Now, we're looking at quitting blaming. So we've got some help here on who we blame and what for. Hopefully you've got a list. And I'm inviting you and me, too, to start just keeping a tally of how the mind blames, who it blames, and what it blames for. And instead, our exercise this week is to stop blaming, to actually quit it, and to take back responsibility for ourselves, for the part of us that we can actually do something about, to take responsibility for our own life, our own state of being, our own happiness, our own stress levels, and to quit blaming and therefore quit giving away our God-given personal freedom and power to anybody or anything in any situation. So, thank you, Jay. He's not going to blame me if he can't do that. That's a start. And I won't blame you if you blame me. How's that? Now, think about then, what is the consequences to you for all the self-blame that you keep on? Should have done this. Should have done that. should have seen this, should have thought about that, should have planned ahead, should have had a plan, should have known, should have gotten it sooner, should be there already. So what's your self-talk? How does your self-blame look? What's a demonstration, an example of how you blame self? It's the ego bragging about its badness. Yes. And into infinity. Insatiable. No end. What are some examples of how you self-blame? Just review even today what you told yourself or what was spun out of the egoic mind that you entertained or believed even for a second. What are some of the core beliefs around blaming? Yes, you're stupid, inept, incompetent. You should know better. You're not good enough. You're not fast enough, smart enough, tall enough, pretty enough. Enough, enough, enough. How else does it blame? What's the messages? And get a sense of what this does to your spirit. Like how it insults your soul. Shame. Because that is what's next right after blame. And we'll get into that in the next week. In this progression of blame, shame, guilt. Blame, shame, and guilt. And in ways we're not even aware of. So get a sense now that tonight in this call, in this very now, you have a spiritual healing. A spiritual healing. Something's occurring right here on the call tonight that is a spiritual healing of sorts. And that you are free, freer from self-blaming. So I'm not going to blame out there. And I'm also not going to blame this one. I'm not going to blame in here. And I'm not going to entertain blame that comes out, that's spun out through the mind. I'm not, so I'm going to be fasting from blaming anybody else and myself. So get a sense of if that were true, if you could actually, what it would feel like, what would that be like? To be free of blaming others. And free of blaming self. See if you can get a feeling of it. You know, it is kind of nice. And I don't know that I would love what is. You know, I seldom ever love what is. I don't even like what is most of the time. But there's a freedom and liberation in accepting what is. There's liberation for me, freedom for me, even though I can't love what is or like what is, there's liberation and freedom by being with what is as what is. This is what is. So even if I can't accept it, not to rally against it or go to war with it. So who would you be? How would you be in the world if you were absolutely done with blaming? And I purposely want to hold a little minute here of silence. And this is based on what the brain scientists are saying and proving scientifically, that We actually rewire. So what fires together stays together in these neural pathways of the brain. That is, we invoke this feeling of who I would be minus blame, who I would be free of this, that we give our brain a chance to create around that new possibility for ourselves. Who would you be? And then the next exploration around this is to see who was the primary, who are now, even currently, who are the primary blamers on you? Who consistently is blaming you? And what for? Who's blaming you and what's it for? So begin to get some orientation to that, like who primarily is doing that. And also be aware of the impact of that. What's it like when somebody's blaming you? When you're the brunt of the blaming coming from out there, what's that impact on you? What are the consequences of that on you when you're on the receiving end of that blaming, not from yourself, but from another person? And then think about what you can do practically, pragmatically, if you were in the face of someone blaming you. You're done with blaming. You're fasting from blaming. I'm fasting from blaming. And blaming now is out there from another person coming back at me. At you, how could you be with blaming differently? What are some specific things you could do even in the face of somebody blaming you? What's something you can do? See it as a call for love. Seek to understand where they're coming from, what they're believing. Just be observant of my own mind and its reaction to this or its resistance to it. Maybe that it's not been as open to this. Observant of my own emotions, my reaction to it. How could you be with a person? That's right, they giggle. It may be funny. There's nothing they can say to you that's new. No new opinion under the sun. Brilliant. Thinking about not just whether that person is right, but how are they right? How are they right? How are they right? Could they be right? Are they right? How are they right? Now that's real self-realization. Yeah, being a victim, a scapegoat, has given us a lot of identity, a lot to identify with. And that's why we're in a session like this, I believe, to keep practicing and going in the direction of shaking that off and of freeing ourselves from some of this Velcro that we've acquired through our own human phenomena and our own humanness. The next quit. Ready, everybody? This will step on some toes, I imagine. Our spiritual types are generally considered from the self-differentiated leadership model as over-functioners. Over-functioners. So if this is our second quit for the week, to quit over-functioning, that means quit doing for others what they and should do for themselves. So if you take this on, who in your life are you going to quit doing for that can do for themselves? This also means to quit over-functioning by quit trying, and the key word is trying because it is impossible to do, to quit trying to control people and to quit controlling, attempting to control a situation. This will ruin our codependency. You're right, Pooh Bear. This says the opposite then of codependent actions. So begin to think about and make a list if it helps you. Who are you over-functioning with? Who are you doing for that's perfectly capable of doing for themselves? Who is it? Spouses, partners? Yeah, mighty heavy load. A sweet little emoticon of some sort came up with us trying to world. So who are you doing it with? Not are you doing it, who with? Now see if you can get in touch with why. Why would you do for others what they could do for themselves? Why would you do for others what they should be doing for themselves? See if you can answer the why. Why? Why? What causes that? Why am I doing that? Feel sorry for them? It's a way for me to stay connected. It's a way for me to have relationships. It's a way to manipulate. Manipulation is fun, somebody says. That's honest. We get off on manipulating. We do it out of a lack of trust. Why do you do for others? So I do it out of impatience. I do it out of a feeling that I have more than they do and that I should. Yes, it gives us an exaggerated sense of importance. We do it to feel loved. We do it, bingo, we need to be needed. Now, this is the driving force, and therefore, the more we do it, then the naturally the more needy people we're going to attract because we have a chronic anxiety. We are chronically helpful, naturally going to attract people that are chronically helpless. So our need to be needed is the addiction. Speak the behavior. And then we eventually do, when it's not honest, we overfunction and then begin to resent them for it. And do it. It's one of the comments here is we do it because as long as I'm looking at them and doing something for them and minding their business, I don't have to look at myself. I don't have to self-realize or look at my own patterns or find the nose on my face. And we're much more prone to look outer instead of to go within. Yes, and then we're seeking to find value, safety, and power outside of ourselves, which then take as addictive patterns of doing, doing, doing. What are the consequences on you of your overfunctioning? What are the consequences to you other than resentments? What are the consequences to you? Yes, it's exhausting. It wears me out, drains me. These are very valid reasons to put this quit into function this week. So I can be less drained, less exhausted, and quit wearing my butt out. Yes, thank you for your honesty. It provides deep-seated anger, even rage, enraged, outraged, when I'm doing these dishonest actions in the name of helping, in the name of caring, in the name of love. Yes, high blood pressure, all sorts of diseases as a result of this. Yes, and I don't know anymore or whose I am. And I'm so caught in the doing, I seldom ever have a reference for my own divinity. And that this is not something I have to prove. We often don't notice how tired we are or burned out. We're in such a autopilot of doing and doing and doing. Well, one of the questions is, why would I have more rage now than ever? Answer that. I can just tell you that rage mounts up, and any rage that's not met with some understanding, any rage that is suppressed, depressed, disowned, denied, which is common for us spiritual types, we've made anger, rage, those feelings wrong, then we stuff them in, and then it's like a pressure cooker. And it's going to come out one way, which is the reason, one of the reasons why it's absolutely spiritually wise and spiritually necessary to continue to dump, find meaningful practices, very specific ways to express this rage and anger and hurt onto paper, into journaling, into movement, kicking, thrashing, walking, throwing rocks, breaking sticks, beating a pillow, anything that's going to move this energy on through us so that we're not trying to, it's like if not to do it is like to try to hold a giant ball underwater that absolutely cannot be done. And to stop calling it wrong or weak, that it's part of our humanity. It's a part of what is normal human phenomena, and we can make room for it instead of cutting off from it and denying or pretending that it's not there. So quitting over-functioning, quitting doing for other people what they do for themselves. Now, imagine if you actually do some of this week and they're accustomed to you doing for them, if they've counted on you, we've been doing it so long, imagine what you're going to hear from them. What are you likely to hear if you change the way you're going to relate to them, if you're going to be leaving them to do a little more for themselves than what they've been doing, what are you likely to come across? Yes. What have I done to you? Are you mad at me? Are you okay? So notice as you think about this, as we explore this, and then, yes, why are you doing this to me? Likely rejection. And rejection can take many forms. They could actually cut off, stop speaking, withdraw, withhold. They could also get jacked up, even confront or bring the conflict. Just notice that this is where we typically fold when we start getting that heat from them, because we've installed these buttons and then given them the code to the buttons. We've taught them innocently, taught them if they shame us enough, blame us enough, guilt us enough, threaten us enough, withhold enough, that we'll fold. So they know that we don't have the stamina and the resilience to bear this kind of pressure. So you can expect anytime Murray Bowen, a medical doctor named Murray Bowen, he wrote about this and fleshed this out as a medical doctor back in the 50s. And what he said about it is predictable. If you attempt to make even a minor change in these emotional triangles and in these emotional binds that we have with our close relationships and family, that they predictably will apply pressure to get you to change back. Change back. Change back. That's the message. And not subtly. Not subtle messages that we will get from them to change back, which could look like some of these ways that I've just spoken about. And what he saw in observing these people and families and these dynamics was, if one person in the system could build some stamina and resilience and bear some of this heat coming from them, if they could bear the looks and bear their attitudes and bear their threats, that actually the entire system would calibrate to a higher level of functioning. If one person in the system could, quote, hold this new way of being long enough, the entire system would raise up and rise up into a higher state of consciousness. If one person in the system could do this. So hopefully in hearing that will inspire and motivate you and me again to be willing to be the one in our systems, in our triangles, in our relational dynamics, to be the one that can actually put this forth, even to a small degree. Even a small degree of this kind of differentiation can have an exponential effect on the mind, body, soul, spirit, and then ultimately our relationships. And of course, don't believe me, because until you've experienced this for yourself, it's just Martha Creek's blah, blah, blah. So some techniques for doing this would be that you absolutely predict they're going to try to pressure you to change back and to pick up right where you left off and to continue to do it. So you could have in place for yourself an acceptance of that so you wouldn't be shocked when they do it. Also, it could help to have a partner, someone to call to say, I'm getting a lot of pressure from my family and I really want to stay the course on this. I really do want to give this self-differentiation a go. And I want to continue to define myself in ways that I haven't before. And to ask for somebody to walk with you through it. Diane to speak clearly and directly about what I am willing to do and what I'm not willing to do. That means telling them up front that I'm trying something different and I'm going to be doing things differently in the future. So that they're given notice, so to speak. It's helped me in the past. I call that like naming the ghost. So I can say, this is likely going to look like it's against you in some way. I've been doing this, this, and this for you for a long time. And I realize that it's not my responsibility to do that. That in fact is your responsibility to do that. So I will be working at removing myself from that. Yes, transparently and authentically. And I want to tell you up front, it's nothing to do with me loving you less. My relationship with you is intact. I value my relationship with you. I do love you and sincerely love you. And I'm simply not going to be doing these things for you that I've been doing. That it's not my responsibility to do it, and it's not honest for me to keep doing it. It may cost the relationship. That's exactly right. I had to be willing to lose that relationship, and I'm still willing to lose that relationship. Because what I found is by me over-functioning in these relationships the way I was doing is I had taken these people hostage. I had taken these people that I love and care about as a hostage. And I was operating my self-worth and value and how to be somebody around what I can do for them. I also became aware that I had created dependence in my life, and it's the last thing I want to be in the world is dependent or a dependent, and I had done the same thing to people and to others that I did not want to be done to myself. So I had a literal spiritual awakening about it. So I realized that I have made dependence out of people and taken them a hostage. And it showed up for me as it became like a master-slave relationship. That what me providing for them kept them disempowered, disabled, and ultimately a slave to me in many ways, and that was out of integrity for me. It is not honest, actually. It's not who I've come here on the world to be, and I don't want them, that's right, I don't want them beholden to me, and I don't want to be beholden to another person too. So if I want it to end, if I want it to stop out there in the external, I have to stop it here where it started. And that's right. they often don't appreciate what we're doing. And we may not realize just how much they don't, not only don't appreciate it, they may not even notice what all we're doing. So see if you can muster up some courage to try this self-differentiation, to give these practices a little bit of a try on this week, and to know that it's predictably going to be questioned, even doubted, that you're likely to get pushback, that you're equipped for that pushback. You don't have to do that alone either. And that you are in a learning environment to learn where I'm doing it and how I'm doing it, what the consequences are, and what the possibilities for me are if I can just shift this even a tiny bit. So one of the questions, thanks, Connie, one of the questions is, what if I'm the receiver of the overfunctioner? And I say, ride the wave. if somebody's doing it for you, enjoy it, because it won't last all that long. And of course, I'm playing in that, because if that is not honest for you, I can tell you, for me, if I believe that somebody's over functioning in my life, for me, things I can do for myself, it's actually not a problem with me, unless I get a sense that it is not being done honestly, or that they are resenting me for it, that they're keeping score about what they're doing for me, or keeping tallies, which makes it out of integrity and dishonest for me. If that's the case, then I have to say, you know, I'm going to ask you to stop. I receive your gift. I see here that you want to do this for me, and I'm going to ask you to stop doing it for me. I want to do this myself. I want to take more responsibility for myself, and I want your energy spent doing something meaningful and interesting to you, not directing it over here to me. But now, and remember, guys, that this is not a formula. There's no formula for this. That this varies in degrees in the relationships we're in. It varies in degrees with what kind of shape we're in emotionally, spiritually, physically, for sure physically and financially. And the same thing is true for them. So over-functioning is not a thing. It's more of a spectrum. So there'll be times I do it more and times I do it less. Times the people that care about me are going to do it more, times they're going to do it less. So the most we can do is raise our awareness about it, be aware of how I'm doing it, where I'm doing it, why I'm doing it, what's causing that. Also aware of what the consequences are on me, what the consequences are on them, and what another option for me is. What is another option for me other than to keep doing what I've always done? Oh, big deep breath, everybody. Also brought to tonight's class, I think I'm going to read this a little bit, majority of this, and then hope and pray and know that you'll find through hearing it something you can relate to, a takeaway of some sort. And it's titled, it's a blog kind of writing about the characteristics of self-differentiation, self-differentiated people. Others refer to something like this as emotionally mature, or emotional maturity, as emotional intelligence. And what I know for sure for me and the people I witness is I cannot be spiritually mature until I am increased my emotional maturity. So I'll be opening up the field next week to look at some of this emotional health, healthy emotional, unhealthy emotional ways of being. So are the characteristics of a more spiritually mature, emotionally mature person include an easy flow of love and affection. An easy flow of love and affection. Emotionally, spiritually mature people are open to love and affection. We have the ability to trust people and to trust ourselves for both giving and receiving of love. And for me, I also have to trust that if people are not able to give it, that I must trust that as well. That this varies in degrees with what people have capacity for. Emotionally and spiritually mature people do not have obstructions, or as many obstructions in our personalities, which hamper our ability to believe in a goodness of life. Spiritually mature people can show vulnerability by expressing love and accepting expressions of love. So we could be vulnerable with purpose, so to speak, or intention. Spiritually mature people can meet reality as it is, face to face with reality. Mature people do not waste their time and resources living in denial, living in storytelling, living in hashing out and playing over and over what's already over, the past, what's already done. We see situations in life for what they are, and we're less likely to manufacture our own interpretations and our own truth. So, aka, we're not as likely to make up stuff and then believe what we've made up. Well, we do have a ways to go, Cindy, and me too. And all I can say is we're headed in that direction, and it's process and progress. So practice makes progress. Practice makes progress. Spiritually and emotionally mature people face the truth of life. We're going to be less scared to deal with life as it comes, to deal with difficult situations. We don't have as tender of a shell like emotionally immature people do to hide under or to clean up after, so to speak. Emotionally and spiritually mature people find it easier to learn from the life experiences, to learn from whatever arises. This comes from our ability to see things more generally in a positive light. That even though I don't like it or love it, I can learn from this. This is for me, not against me. Whereas less mature or more immature people don't learn from it. They believe they're victim to something. Then they conceive that life situations are dramatic, and they see it in distortion and seldom ever in the actual facts about what actually happened. As we mature, we can take criticism a little less negatively. We can be a little bit more positive in taking feedback and criticism. Again, we don't have to like it. We can accept responsibility for our part. And again, have a little confidence that we can grow and learn and actually improve, develop ourselves. Emotionally and spiritually mature people have hope. We're generally more hopeful. So there's an energy of hopefulness. To look for the best, to even hope for the best. We can generally see goodness in everything, and we're less likely to tend to pessimism. It also includes that we're interested in giving, and that we give out of our fullness. We give out of our fullness, out of gratitude, that we not only want to enhance the quality of our life, but we want to enhance the quality of other people's lives as well. And then the ability to learn from all experiences. And last, to work at, lean toward, focus on, and go in the direction of open-mindedness. to worry less about things we cannot change, to worry things about things we cannot help, to be open-minded enough to listen thoughtfully to the judgments, the opinions of others without taking them on, without embodying them. And practicing tonight to drop our fault finding. Stopping blaming, stopping over functioning, or at least reeling it in just a little. It's time to go. Much, much love to you all. If I can support you, get directly in touch with me, marthacreek.com. Lots of workshops there, lots of ways to connect, and it's my privilege to serve you in any way that I can. Here's the mic.